Good morning, everyone. So I want to talk a little bit about Lashon Hara today. It comes up in Avos Rabbi Nassan, because the previous Mishnah spoke about a neighbor of Russia will end up suffering collateral damage because the Russia's wall will get afflicted with saras, and if you're adjacent to the Russia's home, then your wall will obviously be affected. So based on that intro, which we spoke about earlier this week, so Avos Rabbi Nassan speaks about the dangers of Lashon Hara. This is one of the areas in the Gemara which Chazal actually articulates some of the dangers of Lashon Hara. It's a little bit in Erechin, a little bit here, not too many other places. So this is a very important discussion. It's about a perek long, so we'll talk about it next week as well. So the Mishnah begins, Perek Chi Mishnah Beis, that there are 10 trials and failures and minor mutinies, insurrections that Am Yisrael subjected HaKadosh Baruch Hu to in the desert, and the most vicious of all of them was not the Egel in Parshas Kutisa, it was Meraglim in Parshas Shlach. And why is the Meraglim worse than the Egel? So you would have thought because they already failed once and they were immature, maybe they should have recovered and have better sense. Second time around, twice cautious, once bitten, twice cautious. But according to this Medrash, what makes the Meraglim so insidious and so divisive is because it's not a theological error. Theological error is people who are searching for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Egel, but it's moral bankruptcy. Moral degeneracy. By saying Lashon Hara about Israel, it wasn't just a theological flaw, by not believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but by being so vicious and negative and toxic, and every story in life has two different narratives. You can either be positive about it and optimistic and see the glasses half full and try to highlight the positive, and they could have seen Eretz Israel in that light. It's a supernatural land with supernatural opportunities and supernatural challenges, and people are giants, and the terrain is ragged, and this is Hashem's land, and Hashem will help us. And instead, they turn the entire story into a cynical derision of the land and Hashem's capability to provide that land for them. What makes this fascinating is that it reminds us that with all moral crimes, and in particular with Lashon Hara, it's not just problematic because of the impact it will have on the victim. If I say Lashon Hara about Gil, it will ruin your reputation, people will look at you more negatively, your feelings will be hurt. But it's also criminal because of the moral corrosion and the moral contamination it causes to the speaker. When they said Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael wasn't affected negatively. Eretz Yisrael is an inanimate object. It's not like Eretz Yisrael's reputation was ruined. It's not like Eretz Yisrael walked away with hurt feelings. It's not like the land of Israel suffered the business losses. This is purely the reflexive dangers of any moral crime, in particular Lashon Hara. If you speak Lashon Hara, you'll become toxic, you'll become corrupt, you'll become someone who's interested in gossip, you become... So it's a very important world of Lashon Hara to create sensitivity. The problem with this world of Lashon Hara is it's very hard to create a concrete map of what's mutter and what's aser, because it all depends upon the context, the body language, the intentions. There's so many factors that go into differentiating when you're allowed to share information and speak information, when you shouldn't speak information. That's why the Gemara has very, very little concrete halachic mapping. Are the empty guys learning Shabbos also? For Pesach. Brachos. So you're learning very carefully the first parak? Seven parak. So you're learning very carefully the laws and the maps of Zimun and Berachos HaMazon and where you start Zimun. You don't just say, let's be a Mizamei. It's a very, very clear halachic system. We've been learning Shabbos for the entire year. Each malacha has volumes of ideas that help us map it. With Lashon Hara, you have very, very few statements in Chazal. You have a statement in Bava Basra, one or two statements in Erechin, because there's no way to map Lashon Hara. Because if you say something in Baghdad in the year 400 with proper intentions in that socio-economic context, that may be one thing. And if you say something else in Warsaw in the late 19th century, maybe in a totally different thing, which is why the Chafetz Chaim felt that in a newly developing world of information and newspapers and media and telephones, people required a sensitivity readjustment towards Lashon Hara. So he wrote two svarim. One is the Chafetz Chaim, one is Shmiras HaLashon. One is an attempt to create a halachic map. One is just a general moral vision of how to avoid Lashon Hara. But it's very hard to paskin. There's no way for anyone to paskin what's mutter, what's aser. Chafetz Chaim is just trying to give some basic parameters. And now we're living about 120 years later. Now the entire world has changed because of internet and facile communication. And if anything, that may make things less Lashon Hara. Because the more public knowledge is, the less it can be Lashon Hara. It's very hard It requires sensitivity. Don't let anyone paskin for you as a general rule of thumb what is or isn't asr. But this Mishnah, in Amos Rav Nassim, provides some very basic guidelines. So, for example, after describing the Lashon Hara of Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim against Eretz Yisrael, it describes the adjacent story of Miriam and Aharon. And their Lashon Hara set against Moshe. It's not clear whether Aaron spoke or whether he was even punished, but Miriam definitely spoke and was punished by Tadaber Miriam the Aaron. It sounds like Aaron was involved. What was the Lashon Hara? Why was it so insidious? What can we glean in terms of guidelines for Lashon Hara? So evidently, this is how the timeline went. When Eldad Umedad were deselected from being prophets in Parshas Baloscha, so Miriam overheard Sipara saying, Baruch Hashem, they weren't selected as prophets, because if they were, woe is unto their wives. She was saying something negative about the wives of prophets, because my husband, because he's a Navi, has to be in a constant state of receptivity and capability to talk to Hashem. He's separated from me. Miriam eavesdrops and overhears, and she starts speaking. Not clear to whom she speaks, probably to herself, to Aaron. So the first rule is, this is private information. This is information that Sipara didn't really share with anyone. She just said in a moment of frustration. It obviously is a stressor for her in her marriage that Moshe had to not be with his wife so he can constantly receive the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it depends what type of information you're sharing. This information that's private, that could border on Lashon Hara or something we call Megala Sod, which is roughly similar to Lashon Hara. If it's something the person isn't embarrassed by, share it freely. Second question, does it stress that person? Or is it just information that's just subjective? It's something that person is particularly sensitive to. Evidently, Tzipora said in a moment of frustration, seeing people being selected for prophets and realizing that the same fate would befall their wives as befell her. That's number one. Number two, this is how Miriam speaks. Miriam says as follows. Where's the language? Excuse me. Miriam Amra, Eli Hayadib, where Hashem also spoke to me, V'lo Pirashtim Eitzel Bali, and I didn't separate from my husband. Aaron Amar, Eli Hayadib, where Hashem spoke to me, V'lo Pirashtim Eitzel Ishti, what makes Moshe feel he's so special? That because he's a Navi, he has to separate from his wife. So this is a second indicator, a second marker, that it's said in a way that's personal, not depersonal. It's almost as if they feel jealous. Why Moshe has higher nevuah than we do. He separates from his wife. It's said out of jealousy, out of envy, out of contentiousness, out of strife. It's not said in an objective way. It's not said depersonally. If you have a personal stake, maybe you should be the one speaking. If it's a person that should be speaking about Moshe and whether you should or shouldn't separate, ask someone else who's not a Navi, who's not the brother or the sister. Recuse yourself from this situation. Because of their personal negiah, their personal engagement, and because it triggers some sort of competition between Aaron and Moshe, Aaron and Miriam and Moshe, who's got superior nevuah, that creates an edge to it that's very, very dangerous. And then finally, it was said, not in Moshe's presence, and they were said amongst themselves, and at least in Avos Rav Nassim, that actually makes it sound like it was less criminal. Had it been sent to Moshe, it would have been more offensive. But sometimes when you say something in someone's presence, it's less criminal because you're more careful about the way you say it. So generally, one of the yardsticks for Lashon Hara is, would you be prepared to say that in the presence of the target or subject of your conversation? If you would be, then it's more likely not to be Lashon Hara. It's rather just exchanging information. If you wouldn't be prepared to say it in that person's presence, it's more likely you're trying to get away with something and speak negatively or aggressively in a manner the person won't hear. So these are three markers that we can glean or that we can draw from this Mishnah. Number one, was it said in confidence? Was it said as public information? Number two, stressor or not stressor? Number three, is it personal or are you just sharing information? Number four, is it something you'd be prepared to say if the person were standing there or not? Again, it's very, very hard. Each case is very, very, I mean, you can have some very, very difficult situations that emerge from hypersensitivity to Lashon Hara. Well, there's cases where people are asked their advice about Shidduchim, and they know something very, very important about one of the parties. They don't want to divulge it because of Lashon Hara. And then they're subjecting the other person of the Shidduch to what could be a very difficult marriage and a lot of suffering and a lot of heartache because they didn't want to divulge information that was very important. So they ask you about a Shidduch, about a job opportunity. It's very important to know that you can't be hyper careful about Lashon Hara because you can end up hurting people and damaging relationships in very, very significant ways. So a lot has to do with intention, a lot has to do with motivation. If your intentions are pure, your motivations are pure, you're careful about what you say, In general, it's a nice idea not to speak about people too much. Forget Lashon Hara. The second you start speaking about people, you'll get closer to the world of Lashon Hara. Eleanor Roosevelt, who was a wife of Franklin Roosevelt, one of the American presidents of World War II, once said, small minds speak about people, average minds speak about events, large minds speak about ideas. So the larger your mind, the more you want to speak about ideas, the smaller your mind. So this whole world of gossip and internet sites dedicated to gossip and newspapers and tabloids and gossip, it's a very, very dark and mindless and base and menial world. And unless you're involved in that world, not just by not reading tabloids and internet sites and television programs that thrive on gossip, just in general, a member of Liechtenstein would be very, very uncomfortable whenever the conversation veered towards speaking about people. And trust me, he would never say something negative about anyone. But even conversations about people and their lives, it's somewhere along the boundary between Lashon Hara and also lack of tznius. Even if you're not saying anything which is Lashon Hara, you shouldn't be peering into people's lives. We've created a bit of a voyeuristic society, which we like seeing other people's lives and talking about their lives. And tznius means you have your life and I have my life, and hopefully we can share it in positive ways, in ways that inspire you. But sometimes, you know, a lot of the boys that have been here for a while, when it's Tzvat Shabbaton, there's emotion in Tzvat Shabbaton. So you can think there's a strong trace of emotion about privacy. He doesn't like sharing about his private life so much. I don't feel that same inhibition. I feel like it's important for me to share parts of my life that could be instructive or helpful. Everyone has different quotients and gradations of that. But certainly, the degree of privacy that your life is your life and another person's life is his or her life, not trying to create invasive or infiltrating lack of boundaries, it's very important to think about. So, Mirtz Hashem, we'll talk about the response to Miriam Saras Moshe's Tvila, and Moshe's identification with Miriam's pain next week in Mirtz Hashem. Okay? Good day, everyone. Who's running tomorrow? 1 second. Who's running tomorrow? Everyone say who's running the marathon tomorrow. Okay, Rev is running the marathon.